Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Get ready.
You ready?
Ready.
Ready.
We're ready.
I'm ready. 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 Ready.
Are you ready?
Get ready.
3, 2, 1.
Ready?
Yes.
We're ready.
This is St. Louis's News Radio.
I'm ready.
And this is Overtime.
Okay. I'm ready.
We're ready. Tom Ackerman with you, and joining us in studio doing a little overtime, Amy Markscores is with us. Hello there.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day.
It is a gorgeous day. Great day. Have you been out for a run yet?
I haven't run yet this morning. I think I'm going to run later on this evening, enjoy the cooler temperatures, maybe a sunset.
Amy celebrating a birthday later this week.
I am. I will be turning 36, and I will be running 36 miles on Friday morning.
Which should be a lovely day as well. And joining us on Overtime is Mark Reardon. Have you gotten a bike ride in yet?
Well, I got about 6 miles in. I drove the puppy to puppy daycare. That was in my car. So, you know, 6 miles in the car. That's not too bad. I'm feeling pretty good this morning,
all
Tommy.
Right. All right. That's good. Feeling good about yourself. Absolutely. Mark Reardon with us. Amy Markscores with us, and St. Louis County has kept the public in the dark about what investigators found after four inmates who were held at the county jail died this year. Interim Director Lieutenant Colonel Troy Doyle said that he's created an internal unit to review inmate deaths and report back to the public within 48 hours of the suspected cause of death. Within 30 days, the county will complete a comprehensive investigation, including a public release of policies that need to be changed or staff that were held accountable. Amy, after 60 days, the county will issue a progress report. What do you think about this change?
Well, I mean, I'm glad they're looking into it because the conditions of the prison, if they were leading to or somehow a catalyst to the death of these foreign inmates, well, that's criminal in and of itself. So hopefully, the progress report comes out and they're able to show improvements and also hold those accountable.
Mark, your response to that?
Well, you know, look, if I'm a family member here, I definitely want some answers to some of the things that have happened. And I guess my understanding is there is reluctance to, you know, release some of this information, at least initially, because they're worried about lawsuits. But it's an unfortunate situation, and there should be greater transparency. I mean, you sort of have to put yourself in the situation of the family members. Now, having said that, I think that if family members are close to people, this one guy like had undiagnosed leukemia. It's hard for me to believe. I mean, look, there's a lot of mysterious things that happened here, so I'm not so sure why other people. Not to let the St. Louis County folks off the hook, but why wasn't some of this available just with information via family members? Then again, maybe it was, and we just don't know at this point.
The Justice Department wrote a letter to Robert Mueller on Monday about his upcoming congressional hearing. They told the former special counsel his testimony must adhere to the 448-page report he issued earlier this year. Mark, the testimony, the letter stated, must remain within the boundaries of your public report because matters within the scope of your investigation were covered by executive privilege. This letter was sent in response to Mueller's request for guidance about his testimony. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that it doesn't really differ from what Bob Mueller himself told us a couple of months ago in the report and in his brief statements to the media. So you have a 448-page report. He's going to submit that publicly available version on Russian interference as a statement for the record this morning. And then when it comes to some of these questions, look, this is another politically motivated hearing, and both sides do it. If we're being honest, I don't think we're going to glean any new information here outside of some chest thumping and things along those lines. So will we? I know that the left is so pumped up about this. They think they're going to get down to the bottom of something that really isn't there anymore. And this is going to be a long hearing. Probably you're going to see, and we've seen this on display many times in Washington, certainly in the past 8 months or so, just members trying to make their points. There's no questions going to be asked here. It's all trying to make political points and score political points against the president.
Yeah, you know, it almost feels like this is just an opportunity for grandstanding and maybe sound bites for people for upcoming elections, because if there was anything to be found in this report, it would have been found and harvested and disseminated by now. You know, they've talked so much about the impeachment process. They've talked so much about collusion and about the president, but they haven't been able to bring anything tangible to the table. And you know there are enough eyes on this report, and there will be enough eyes on this report, that if anything is there, it would have come out by now, but it hasn't. So I think this is more of an opportunity for politicians to get their sound bites in and to have good sound clips.
Meanwhile, the White House and congressional negotiators, Amy, reached accord on a two-year budget yesterday that would raise spending by $320 billion over existing caps and allow the government to keep borrowing. That most likely averts a fiscal crisis, but is it still splashing more red ink on an already surging deficit?
Yeah, it is. And I think what we've seen now is that President Trump, while he does speak as a social conservative, he's a fiscal moderate. I don't think there's a great dedication to lowering spending or cutting the budget, much less balancing the budget. So I think what you've got is a fiscally moderate president who's going to keep things going.
I don't know. Well, I don't want to tag the president with all of this. I think you're probably right that he's more fiscally moderate. This is one of those situations where, and it frustrates me because I am a fiscal conservative and I've been concerned about the debt and the deficit and remain concerned about the debt and the deficit. Look, Rand Paul got a lot of grief last week because of the 9/11 bill. Not so sure that was the, that was the issue to really stand upon the mountain on debt and deficit. But his point is, and this is what happens, and it's happened, you know, even if you go back to Ronald Reagan, there is no such thing as cutting spending in Washington. Everybody wants it to happen, but there's only reductions in the increases. That's the world that the swamp lives in. So Republicans get into office, they sort of bust the deficit. It's concerning. You used to have people that, you know, were very concerned about this when President Obama was in office, justifiably so, with the ballooning deficit. But at this point, you know, there's rationalization for everything they do in Washington. Well, you just, you know, busted the budget and the deficit. Well, we had to do it because of the tax cuts. Now, I was a supporter of the tax cuts, but it would be nice to have spending reined in other areas. And unfortunately, and I, by the way, I've always been one to say that defense spending needs to be on the table as well. And that was something the Republicans certainly, when Speaker Ryan was there and the president, were unwilling to do.
Meanwhile, there's a new boss in Britain, and we'll talk about him when we come back. He is Boris Johnson. With Mark Reardon and Amy Markscores, I'm Tom Ackerman. It's overtime on KMOX. It's 8:39.
Get ready for the Cards and Pirates tonight. Ammon Total Access 510. First pitch 6:05. Hear it here on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, KMOX.
I say to all the doubters, dude, we are going to energize the country. We're going to get Brexit done.
That is Boris Johnson. And the big story today out of Britain is that Boris Johnson is now leading the way. How about that story? As Mark Reardon and Amy Markscores are back with us on Overtime. The new prime minister, what do you think? I heard CBS call him the flamboyant Boris Johnson, Mark Reardon.
Well, there's no doubt that he's flamboyant. He's a real interesting guy. You know, he was born here in the United States, and according to my friend Doug High, who's a contributor on CNN and also on my show on a regular basis, he's a guy who understands this country maybe perhaps like no other politician across the pond since Winston Churchill. And he was a guy who, even going back to 2015, and Doug wrote about this on CNN.com this morning, spent some time in the London mayor's office, and this was a guy that knew a lot about the U.S. political system and the things that were going on here and did not dismiss Donald Trump's ability. He's also forged a bit of a relationship with Trump when other world leaders have been unable to do so. Now, that's certainly important when it comes to the whole scheme of things and, you know, global politics, because you have two of the most powerful, if not the most powerful, entities on earth in the, you know, the United States and England. when it comes to Brexit, you know, I don't know as much about the inter-party struggles that they have over there. I always find the system, the parliamentary system, very entertaining and interesting because it's so different from ours. But the you know, Britain does not have a deal to leave the European Union, and there really is not one in sight, and they're still very divided over Brexit. So he's flamboyant. He's someone who may resort to maybe some broader analogies than just a tweet here and there, but he's going to be interesting to watch, and you can't just write him off as flamboyant because this guy does understand politics, and he knows what happens in this country as well.
You know, it's an interesting foil to President Trump because he does have a big personality, and everything you've heard, you know, even that sound bite that Tom played, Jude, we're going to make Brexit happen. You know, you don't necessarily hear heads of state speak like that aside from our own president right now. And the parliamentary system in Great Britain is fascinating. It's very complicated. And man, you talk about turmoil right now in Great Britain, I think, between the internecine aspects of the Labour Party and what they're dealing with and with the anti-Semitism that's going on and how people are leaving the Labour Party. And then you have Theresa May's legacy and then Brexit. It'll be an interesting political milieu to watch.
I say to all the doubters, dude, we are going to energize the country. We're going to get Brexit done.
There he is, Boris Johnson. He says he's going to get it done. Meanwhile, in New York, a former employee of Gramercy Tavern, which I should say is my favorite restaurant on the planet, but Gramercy Tavern in New York has filed a gender discrimination suit, Amy, over being required to wear a male-specific uniform, including garments like a tie. Gramercy Tavern now is part of Danny Meyer's Union Square Hospitality Group. Danny is from St. Louis. That group operates a number of popular New York area restaurants. What do you think about this suit?
Well, I'm a little confused because if stereotypes don't exist and gender is a social construct, then what does a tie even mean? Is a tie male specific? Is it not male specific? I know at Annie Guns they wear ties, males and females. Everybody wears a tie at Annie Guns. And I guess this employee felt that the tie was the male specific uniform and that did not fit with what he or she identified as. This is getting to a level that is impossible to keep up with. It's a non-sustainable PC culture where everybody is offended by everything. And what I don't understand is if all of these terms that have to do with male or female or gender are fluid and stereotypes don't mean anything, then how are we still getting offended by those very stereotypes? I'm confused.
It's utterly ridiculous. Look, there's a very simple solution here. If you don't want to wear a male-specific uniform, if you don't want to wear something that the company requires, and then don't work there. Work somewhere else. And this is a money grab. I mean, let's be honest. And you have it's probably a combination between a money grab and someone trying to make a social point. But these are potentially dangerous lawsuits. So I hope that the courts take a close look at the way that they're ruling in these cases because they could have really, really broad implications. But it's more than nonsense. We're going to hear this every single week, things along these lines. And, you know, if you want to make some, and I certainly would make some comments on the broader political implications here, because there are some. This is what I had this conversation via text with a friend of mine in New York City, works for CBS last week, who lives inside this bubble. And I said, look, you guys don't get how the rest of the country reacts to some of these things. And I think it's time you try to understand it a little bit.
How about how powerful social media can be? A single tweet caused Macy to drop an entire product. A woman named Allie Ward, a science reporter and podcast host based in Los Angeles, was walking by the flagship Macy's store in New York City. She saw these novelty plates in the window, one of them measuring food portions. One of them, Mark, said skinny jeans, another said favorite jeans, and another said mom jeans. To measure food portions. She saw them and tweeted, how can I get these plates from Macy's banned in all 50 states? An hour later, Macy's dropped the product.
I'm so tired of corporate America not having the guts to stand up to things that are just silly. Look, this is just something fun that people were, you know, doing in a marketing department. Said, hey, let's kind of draw attention to these this way. And you have one person who tweets about this. I guess that goes to the power of social media. And Macy says, you know, they all panic and they think about the stockholders, clearly, because you don't want anything to be affected by this. So, yeah, it's just more nonsense, but corporate America has no courage whatsoever. And in their defense, I understand it is about the shareholders. If I had stock, I'd probably be concerned as well. But look, it's just ridiculous. We're out of control in this country. Both these last two stories prove
it. Yeah, and this is the problem with Twitter, is that it makes the world seem much, much smaller than it actually is. It makes irrelevant voices seem loud. It makes outliers feel mainstream. I mean, this was a single tweet. This is not public outcry. This is not something that the nation was protesting. This was a single person somehow got offended by the phrases and the idea of skinny jeans, favorite jeans, and mom jeans, which, by the way, anyone I've ever talked to has used those phrases about, you know, joked about elastic pants because you're sitting down to a good meal. And by the way, those phrases themselves are relative. My skinny jeans are different than someone else's skinny jeans. So I guess if you're triggered, that's one thing. But there are so many aspects of this that are just ludicrous.
Allie, who has 38,000 followers on Twitter, had a lot of people follow her and follow up and say that they thought that it was casually promoting eating disorders and body shaming. And then Macy's apologized, said they, quote, missed the mark. We'll take a break, come back with Mark Reardon and Amy Mark Scores. I'm Tom Ackerman. It's Overtime on KMOX.
In case you'd like to hear more.
There's more.
This is Overtime on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
There's always more. We have a couple minutes left on Overtime with Mark Reardon and Amy Mark Scores. I'm Tom Ackerman. Let's go back to New York, generating all kinds of stories for us this morning. The Cats have scored a victory over furniture, Mark. The state of New York has become the first in the nation to ban declawing. You can no longer declaw cats legally in New York.
Well, I have three cats. I've had cats since I was a junior at the University of Missouri. Did not have cats when I was a kid. And I found a cat on my front porch. I always like to say my cat Max, who I had for 18 years, found me. And all of my cats have been declawed. All of my cats are declawed right now. And the concern that I would have with this, and I do think that the rescue organizations out there are pretty preachy when it comes to these things. I understand that there's different philosophies about what would happen to the cat, but here's what my concern would be, is that there are going to be far fewer, thousands fewer cats who will be adopted in New York State and any other state who does this, and they will be put to death. So I guess I would put the lives that my cats have right now in a pretty awesome setting here at the Reardon Zoo with three dogs as well, over, you know, the option of sitting in a kill shelter and being euthanized in the end.
Yeah, that's a good point, that there might be fewer cats adopted. And I'm just going to apologize in advance for going here, but I just have to be transparent that this is the first thing I thought of. You have New York becoming the first state to ban declawing as cruel. Well, it was only just a few months ago that New York was celebrating their passage of allowing late-term abortions for any health reason. And regardless of your thoughts on that, it does strike me as very interesting that that was a celebrated moment, that the Empire State Building was lit up in pink. And I think for certain people of certain beliefs, it can be an interesting fact to swallow.
That is Amy Mark Scores. Kevin Colleen joins her after the news.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.